There is no way to understand the damage D.A. Jones has done to victims in a soundbite. Over the last 4 years of Shalena Cook Jones' tenure as the elected D.A. in Chatham County, victims and their families have been struggling to have their voices heard in the courtroom and out of it. Part of the problem stems from mismanagement of the D.A.'s office, but some of it comes from the DA's written and unwritten policies that include a non-disclosure agreement that violates victims' rights. Yeah. I want to get back to the serious violent felony thing. Yes. So we had talked about, you looked at dispositions of cases too.
Yeah. So at first I looked at I looked at the murder cases and see how many of those had reoffended, how many of those were out on bond. And I would say total, because WTOC did their own research on that as well. And at one point they had said that the DA's office had pled down 27 cases. And this was at the end of 2022, had pled down 27 cases. Now there have been multiple cases pled down to involuntary. One case got 10 years probation. I looked at some of those dispositions, and there were a couple of cases that really struck me. And I just didn't understand how these things happen. And in the one case, it was two kids that were shooting guns in Yamacraw.
Now, this is for people who aren't really familiar with Yamacraw, we're talking about a housing project that is full of people.
Yes, that's correct.
And you've also got SCAD traffic that goes in through there all day, every day.
Yep.
So not a safe place to be firing a gun. This is not like out in a field.
No, they were literally firing guns into these buildings, just shooting them off. And the one kid got in front of the other kid and he ended up shooting the kid in the back of the head.
Oh my God.
And so at the plea, the victim, who was the grandmother, came in. And what shocked me the most is that the grandmother was just distraught. And it seemed like the only contact she had with that office was the day before the case went for a plea.
So we're talking about the DA's office. And again, this is a constitutional obligation on behalf of the DA's office to reach out to victims and to talk to them about what's going on with their cases, making sure that they understand what the charges are, why they are what they are. You're just explaining the whole circumstance to them, right?
Yes, exactly. And that's what you're obligated to do. It's part of Marcy's Law that you have to involve the victims in these cases. And this is a case that was played out this year in February.
Oh, my God.
So it was not something that was 3 years ago when she first started. It's a case that just recently happened. And they pled that case down to probation. And the grandmother, in her statement, she says, I was trying to figure out, I called yesterday to figure out, how could y'all charge him with manslaughter? Even though I know the defendant did, my grandson did go out and did what he did. But the individual that shot him left him to die. He walked off. He ran off and left my grandson to die. So how come he wasn't charged with, more than manslaughter? This is a statement of a victim that has not been talked to, was not explained to the process, and why they were pleading this kid out to this lesser charge.
That's horrifying.
Yes.
And I think that this is, again, when you see these things, and I know you have more examples. I've seen it. I've actually had to practice in Chatham County courts recently. As a part-time prosecutor in Effingham, I had a conflict case that was assigned to me. I've seen it. And you see these victims' families come in and they have no idea what's happening with their cases. No one is talking to them. And that is not the fault. And I want to make this clear. You've got some really good victim witness people who are still there.
We have great victim witness people.
But they're overwhelmed.
Yep.
And the prosecutors aren't talking to them.
Well, and I think the problem with that is, and I will say this because I've heard this from people who have left the office, is that they are very concerned about the ramifications of violating the non-disclosure agreement that the DA put in place.
Oh my God, really?
Yes. So
I'm sorry, you have a constitutional obligation to talk about a case.
Yes.
And you're more worried about an internal mandate that is non-enforceable.
Yes. And because...
Okay, tell me about this non-disclosure.
So the non-disclosure agreement, personally, you're in a government office, so any non-disclosure agreement would be invalid and unconstitutional.
Yeah, we're subject to open records.
Exactly. So we have to. But the problem that I have learned from talking to parents of victims and victims themselves is they would call over to that office and they would basically not talk to them or tell them who the prosecutor is on their case. They would not talk to them about the case itself. They wouldn't even tell them when the next court date is on those cases. These people had to actually go and call the media to find out what happened with their case, or call the clerk's office, which is ridiculous.
And again, not legal.
No,
right?
100% not legal.
Victims have a right on anything from felony theft up, have a right to be heard on the disposition.
Yes.
On anything where someone's going to be released, like a bond hearing, or you know, just any of those things, they have a right to be heard. They have a right to be present, and they have a right to know when court is.
Yes, exactly.
That's insane.
They have a constitutional right to hear that.
God, what are we doing? I'm sorry. You have other examples.
So the other example that I have, I mean, there's multiple of these cases, but I'm just giving you some different types of cases. And so the other case that I found that I thought was really troubling, and again, these are cases that were not handled, you know, right at the beginning of COVID or anything like that. This is a case that was handled in 2022. And in this case, the prosecutor had to lay out a factual basis for this rape case that they had reduced down to a sexual battery and an aggravated assault and gave the guy probation. So this is a rape case where the guy should be in prison, is now basically just on probation.
Right. So, and I just want to clarify for listeners, rape has a mandatory minimum of 25 to serve. You can do a downward departure under certain circumstances, but they're minimal. But there is a reason that we treat these cases so seriously because of the damage it does to victims.
Yes.
And I think you saw some of that with this, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So in this case, the individual that was charged was friends with the victim's brother. And he was also, there was another person there. But in any case, they came to the house where the brother lived. The sister was there and they left the house. And the defendant came back to the house to say that he was looking for a phone charger, left the house, then came back a short time later because he couldn't find that. And while he was there, the victim in this case reported that this defendant began making sexual advances and overtures toward her, which she indicated to him she was not interested in. And then at some point, he forcefully forced himself on her by placing his hand on her throat, trying to kiss her, and pinned her wrist to her chest, and ultimately did push her back onto her mother's bed in the residence and engaged in sex with her without her consent, and then left. This is the factual basis that the DA's office put on the record. This is a clear case of rape.
Right.
And so I don't understand. Well, it doesn't
even... aggravated assault strangulation. I'm sorry. Go
ahead. Yeah. And so on top of that, so you have these two cases. Well, they decided to reduce that down. And what bugged me the most about this whole thing is hearing the victim give her a victim impact statement in this case and just how horrendous this was for that person to live through, because she didn't understand exactly what was going on. But she states that on July 7th, one of the worst things that could happen to a woman I experienced in my own home. The crime that this defendant committed against me changed my life forever. There are no words or no penalty that will compensate for the daily struggle I deal with due to this heinous crime. I do not know what life may have in store for this individual, but I pray he understands the ramifications of his actions. And no, it's not okay to force someone to do something against their will, as well as understand the words no means no. I want the defendant to know that he did not break me, although I struggle with his daily actions. Some days are better than others. However, I am a survivor because God got me. And the judge, in when he sentenced the individual, told him the same thing, that said, Mr. Defendant, I want you to understand that no means no. Clearly indicating that this was a rape. And yet this individual got probation.
Well, and so this is something that I have heard, and I'm sure you have too, from people who've left the office and from people involved in the system. Because, you know, obviously we still are friends with people and know people involved in the system.
Yeah.
A judge can reject a plea.
Yes.
And they have. I mean, I went back in the day when I was prosecuting, I had cases where the judge rejected the plea and you end up having a trial. You have a trial because some of these cases are serious and you need to. And that's the way it goes. However, I understand that at this point, the judges are accepting pleas that they normally would not. And part of their rationale, number one, is they've got to move cases. And there's backlog, which we can talk about at some point, too. And that is not backlog created by Meg Heap. That is backlog created by this office as it stands right now. But it is also because the judges don't trust the DA's office to actually be able to do what they need to do to prove these cases in court and get a conviction.
Yeah.
So they're just willing to, like, okay, we'll give you probation, you know, and look the other way.
Yeah.
Which is horrifying. I mean, that, so the judges don't even trust them.
No.
In the system.
No.
You mentioned to me another case that had a sexual assault in the middle of a bunch of bonds.
Yes.
Tell me about this. So
there was another case, and this individual originally was arrested, and that's the first contact that the DA's office had with this case. And so he was already out. He already had three cases.
Oh my God.
And as part of these cases, he it was consented to. This is a consent bond that was given to him. So the DA's office signed off on this bond. And I thought it was kind of crazy that an individual charged with rape would get $1,000 bond.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
I've never heard of that.
I've never heard of it either. That is insane.
Never.
That is insane.
It is insane. That, and so this was consented to by the DA's office, and an order was prepared in this case. And the individual was given this bond knowing that he had other cases already.
Wait, the consent bond is on all three cases.
On all three cases.
You got rape.
You got a property damage claim. And then you've got, I forgot what the other case was, but he had three pending felony cases, not misdemeanors.
Did these all involve the same victim?
Two of them did.
Oh my God. So yes. What is this poor victim supposed to think about? I called the police and I did what I'm supposed to do. What is she... get out of this.
I don't know. But see, and this is the thing that we were trained as prosecutors. When you are looking at a case, that you have to look at the entire history of an individual. So in this case, he had already had a TPO against him for stalking another victim. He tried to run that victim off the road with his vehicle. So a TPO was granted against him for that individual. On top of that, he then decided that he wanted to make sure that the person that he raped, but prior to the rape, did not leave the house. So he kicked this car door and damaged the vehicle and then poured sand into the gas tank to make sure that that car was not drivable.
Well, so that victim couldn't leave.
But unfortunately for him, he poured it in a different person's vehicle. So that person came out and took out warrants for him for damaging her vehicle. Then he got the rape case. So those are three cases already. And that, what bugged me the most about this is that as a lawyer, you're supposed to read the things that are put in front of you before you present it to a judge. But in this case, not only did they give him $1,000 bond, they ordered him to go back to the house by saying that he shall have no violent or harassing contact with the victim. And then on top of that, what made it worse is that they ordered him to have a gun because they said he shall own or possess a firearm, replicas, and ammunitions.
So he is ordered by the court to go out and get a gun? Is that how that reads?
That's exactly how this
and
reads.
And I'm sorry, someone who is considered a senior prosecutor in the present office signed off on that.
Yes, they absolutely did.
What happened after that?
So right after that, he got out, and about 2 or 3 months later, he tried to kill this lady.
Same victim.
Same victim. Aggravated assault.
What are we
doing? Same victim. I have no idea what they're doing over there. And these are the things that I saw, and that, because originally I never thought about running for DA. But when I see these things happening, and it happens over and over, this is just a very small percentage of the cases that are occurring there. And there's so many more of these things that are happening.
Well, I want to make it clear. You're saying it's a small percentage. Is this, we're talking about a small percentage. It is not a small percentage that they are screwing up in this way.
No. No.
It is a very large percentage. I've seen some of it myself.
Yes.
So this isn't a drop in the bucket. This is why we have the level of crime we have right now.
Yes, exactly. Because people aren't afraid. There's no retribution. There's nothing that stops them from doing the same things over and over. And these are the things that not only I worry about, because I have kids and I have to make sure that they go to school and that they're safe, but other people's families have to be safe. And, you know, the mayor's kid complains about it. The city council people complain about it. There are multiple people in this community that complain about it. And then you have a DA that says that she cares about these violent crimes, when you look at the statistics, 90 to 95% of the murders and people who are killed in this community are African American. In 1 year, we had 2 white people killed, and the rest of them were African American. So, I mean, you're not doing any service to your own community when you're not doing anything to prevent them from going out and doing the same thing over and over without fear of any kind of retribution. And when you give them lenient plea deals and sending them out on probation, because I'll tell you, some of the people that are on probation for murder have violated their cases multiple times.
So wait a minute. So we're talking about like that involuntary manslaughter. They reduce a murder to involuntary manslaughter. They put somebody on probation. That person violates their probation. We're doing nothing.
Nothing. They keep their first offender in most cases,
oh,
too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So I think that on the ground, if you're a victim, right, or if you're the family of a victim and you see this happening over and over again, what's the message?
That you need to go take justice in your own hands. That's a big problem.
Right. It is, obviously.
Because if you lose faith in the justice system and in the court system and in your DA's office, then there's no other recourse for you but to take the justice into your own hands. And that is not what we want in this county.
The elected DA's policies are destroying victims' lives, and the media has chosen to ignore their cries for justice. Forcing victims to seek vigilante justice on our streets is the wrong answer for Chatham County and puts all of us at risk. Vote for a safer path forward. Vote for Andre Pretorius in November.